This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio, and I'm at the American Tobacco Historic District. Incumbent Governor Pat McCrory conceded his reelection bid this week, acknowledging that North Carolinians chose his opponent, Roy Cooper, to lead the state.
You know, being the 74th governor of North Carolina has been a privilege and an honor. But during this wonderful season, it's also time to celebrate our democratic process and respect what I see to be the ultimate outcome of the closest North Carolina governor's race in modern history. Despite continued questions that should be answered regarding the voting process, I personally believe that the majority of our citizens have spoken, and we now should do everything we can to support the 75th governor of North Carolina, Roy Cooper.
And while McCrory is on the way out of the governor's mansion, he may hear "you're hired" from President-elect Donald Trump. McCrory met with the businessman in New York, and reports say he may be a contender to head the Federal Emergency Management Agency, which you know as FEMA. In the meantime, the North Carolina legislature gears up for a special session set to begin on Tuesday. The governor says they'll take up funding for Hurricane Matthew and wildfire victims, but critics are concerned about a possible packing of the Supreme Court. Joining me, as he often does, is political junkie Ken Rudin. Welcome back, Ken.
Thank you, Frank.
All right. So Governor McCrory, soon to be former Governor McCrory, concedes, but he may find another job. Met with Donald Trump this week.
He did, in New York, at the New York White House, I guess, the Trump Towers. And he was seen coming in. I guess he met with him on Wednesday. This talk, as you say, is perhaps the head of FEMA. Remember the, what was it, Bush, George W. Bush said, "You did a good job, Brownie."
Yeah.
Patty, we'll call him Patty.
Patty,
whatever.
Good job, Patty.
Exactly. Possible job as FEMA head, possible maybe a job within the Department of Energy, given his Governor McCrory's background. So he may be in line for a position with the Trump administration. Unlike many Republicans who sat out the November election, McCrory was a Trump supporter.
Trump supporter, they have a lot in common, really, if you think about it. Both of them have claimed voter fraud. Neither of them has evidence. Both of them received fewer votes than their opponents. So really, a lot in common, if you think about it.
Well, I mean, I still think it's very fascinating to watch. I mean, we've talked about this in the 4 years of Pat McCrory's governor on your show, how he's gone from a pro-business mayor of Charlotte to having to deal with a very conservative legislature, not always winning his battles with the more conservatives, and then pushing through HB2, which ultimately probably cost him his job, considering the fact that Donald Trump carried the state. Richard Burr won pretty handily, and you have a Republican governor. You have the first governor, I think, in North Carolina history who was defeated for reelection, and in a year that the Republicans did very well.
Well, in a year they did well, so you can call it a close election, but really, given the coattails effect, it was really a resounding defeat. HB2 has to be part of the reason, and you say push through, but in fact he resisted. He pushed against it, and I wonder if this is not another similarity in some ways between McCrory and Trump, in the sense that neither McCrory didn't seem to be the kind of politician who quite understood what he was in for. He comes in as a moderate, thinks he's going to rule from the center, and has no idea that this far right conservative, not even conservative, but really a sort of nationalist legislature was in charge. And it seemed to me, Ken, that he was a little bit surprised by the politics of what was going on in the state, in the same way that Donald Trump doesn't seem to have any real kind of political professional background, and he's the chief executive.
You know, something that's a very interesting point, and I wonder what Roy Cooper thinks is going to face him, because Roy Cooper still takes office under a veto-proof Republican majority in the state assembly. So, Roy Cooper, of course, has much more government experience, has been attorney general, but the question is whether he can be the boss in North Carolina, or perhaps the state legislature still thinks it will be controlling what's going on.
Well, absolutely. It's a veto-proof, but he goes in as a Democrat knowing he's the opposition and knowing what he faces. And I just wonder if McCrory had the political acumen going in, understood politically what he was facing. He seemed to be very surprised, and certainly in the first 2 years, not quite sure what was hitting him. And then in the end, had to be the chief supporter for a bill that he opposed initially. So
yeah.
I wonder about the political skill of Pat McCrory.
Pat McCrory, who ran for governor and lost in 2008, won in 2012. I think what we thought of Pat McCrory back in the days when he was first running and what has happened in his 4 years as governorship, it has changed him completely, no question.
By the way, so the what you were saying about being the first not to win re-election, the Constitution was changed in 1977 to allow for two terms, and since that constitutional change in 77, no one who has run for re-election has been defeated until Pat McCrory in 2016. That just clears that up.
Right.
You know, let's talk about some of the other picks, because I'm interested, too, in some of the other picks. I mean, for instance, we've got the CEO of Carl's Jr. and Hardee's. This is somebody who has opposed better wages for low-wage workers as head of the Labor Department, or the nominal head of the Labor Department, and others who seem to be opposed to the very mission of the organizations that they will now lead. What is this? Yeah.
That is very interesting. I mean, that's what aside from the fact that he named so many generals to positions where he kept saying he knew more than the generals, and here he appoints General Mattis for the Defense Secretary, General Kelly for Homeland Security, General Michael Flynn for National Security Advisor. I think he has something planned for General Motors, maybe. I'm not sure. but the thing is, you're absolutely right. When he names Tom Price to head up the HHS, and Tom Price says he's going to get rid of Obamacare, when he names Betsy DeVos the head of education, and she's clearly not a fan of public education, she's very charter schools and school choice and things like that. Andy Puzder of Labor, as you say, is against the minimum wage. Scott Pruitt, who's the head of the EPA, he's currently suing the EPA as the Attorney General of Oklahoma. So you have a lot of appointees to these cabinet positions, people who probably want to get rid of these cabinet positions, if not government altogether.
Did you read Andy Borowitz in the New Yorker? The headline read, "Trump picks El Chapo to run the DEA." That was a pretty good one.
Well, I mean, why not? I mean, the thought of, I think Ben Carson's a decent guy, and I think he really does want to bring people together, even though he did separate conjoined twins. So I don't know how you bring people together with that. But Ben Carson, talking about Ben Carson, I listen to everything he says about what he wants to do and what he believes the job of HUD is. I mean, look, I think Paul Newman was great in HUD, but I think Ben Carson needs to know more about what he's getting involved in. And I kind of think there are a lot of appointees that Donald Trump is making, appointments that he's making, are with people who may not really understand exactly what's going on. And look, Trump was the ultimate outsider. He boasted of his non-government, outside government experience, and God bless him for that. But somehow a government has to be run. These departments have to be run. We're talking about billions and billions of dollars in these departments. And you can't just say, well, you know, I don't know, for Supreme Court, I'm going to name Judge Reinhold. Yep. We need more,
more
thought than that.
We will certainly see. I'm talking to the political junkie today on The State of Things. Ken Rudin is with us. We're talking about the aftermath of the election, the fact that the governor has gone and auditioned for a job, and talking about these points. Well, again, and I think policy, too, and we've talked about this a couple of times, but things are becoming more pointed now. If you think of a guy like Pudzer, who is Puzder, right, who's opposed to, right, he's a guy who wants to keep wages low. He doesn't want better wages for low-wage workers. Donald Trump is talking about a 35% tariff, right, and that's going to do what to wages? And so it seems to me it's going to be an interesting conflict, even within his own cabinet, or immigration reform. If you really start getting tough on immigrants and they leave the country, what's that going to do to the price of, let's say, fast food workers if you're the CEO of a fast food company?
Well, that's a good point. And one of the guys who one would think would ask these serious and important questions was Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, the former and still Speaker of the House, who made it clear that he did not agree with a lot of the things that Donald Trump was suggesting on the campaign trail. A lot of people felt that Paul Ryan would ask these important questions, but in the many interviews I've seen of Ryan since the election, there was a lot of like, well, you know, don't worry about it, or it'll be fine. And you wonder if Paul Ryan's not going to ask the questions, and the Democrats seem to have their own problems with a serious division. You saw that in the House with Nancy Pelosi's reelection and serious divisions in the battle for the DNC chair. If the Democrats don't have a united party or a united party in opposition, then it just seems like Trump will do what he wants, as he's done most of his life. but he's done it in a democratic system, which is not used to being roughshod over by a very powerful chief executive. You have to go back to maybe FDR or even Lyndon Johnson when you saw that. And in the years since then, you've seen stronger Congresses, but you don't know. I don't know if we're going to see a stronger Congress starting 2017.
Well, again, and it was all in the hands of skilled politicians. You talk about Lyndon Johnson. He understood how to make government. I mean, he was the quintessential politician. FDR, also well-schooled in how to manage the Washington bureaucracy and establishment. You've got a guy with aspirations for totalitarianism, but really, you know, not the political skill. I mean, it's going to be interesting to watch this play out.
Yeah, but one more point about that. But I think that's why I think so many people, not the majority, but so many people voted for Donald Trump, so many states voted for Donald Trump, is because they were tired of politics as usual, tired of the lifetime politicians who did things and maybe things weren't working. They weren't working if your jobs were being shipped overseas. They weren't working if there was terrorism, those acts going around the world and at home. And so people said, look, if established political figures can't get it done, maybe it's time for something new. We'll see how that works out.
We will get used to the refreshing world of Politics Unusual. And,
yes.
And you will be here to tell us more about it. Ken Rudin, always a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Frank.
Ken Rudin is the political junkie. Just ahead, North Carolina writers Lee Smith and Jill McCorkle pair up with two Nashville musicians for an evening of song and storytelling, and we get a preview on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.